Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host. Hello, FinTech leaders. Excited today because we have Ulrich on the show. Ulrich's the co-founder of Vibon. And you know why I'm excited today? It's because Ulrich's actually a true entrepreneur. I know we talk to a lot of founders, a lot of leaders on the show, but he's a guy that spotted a gap, looked at a problem, came up with a solution, and then went out at a pretty young age and built up a team and a product to solve that solution. So extremely excited to have you on the show today, mate. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Richard. It's a pleasure. Love what you're doing. And pretty excited, you know, to have this discussion with you today.
Okay, awesome, man. Let's kick off the show. I normally like to give people a bit of a sense as to the guests, who they are, where they come from, and what have you. So let's start off in that vein. And maybe what I'd actually like to dive into here is the characteristics and traits that have sort of led you down the path of entrepreneurship. So what has made you take that journey, take that path of entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I mean, I always, enjoy building stuff. Like, it started when I was 12, you know, like I would use my parents' computer a lot, you know, browse the internet, going to forums online, learning how to use, you know, Photoshop, how to code. And then from there, I met a guy online that had like a shipping company, and he wanted a logo, which I designed for him. So that's how I sent my kind of first invoice. You know, I can't remember, but it was something like 100 euro. And it's the beauty of the internet, right? That he would have never, you know, imagined, he would have never thought that I was like this 12 years old freelancer behind its parent computer. So I became completely addicted, you know, to the freedom and the power, you know, to build things you can have on the internet. So yeah, not long after that, like I launched my first project, which was a community of like readers and writers, some sort of Wattpad, you know, like it was the early beginning of like the fan fiction trend. And when I was in high school, I moved on to launch an online video game. So at its peak, it had like 50,000 users. So that was a pretty intense experience. And then I continued in that direction. So I went to university. I met like my current co-founders, and with him, we launched a fashion marketplace. So it was kind of like Tinder, but for fashion. So you would, you know, you could swipe like across like different clothes. And what's funny is that, you know, we were not really the first target clients, right? Like we were the least fashionable people at uni. And, you know, I always put the same white shirt. We were not we didn't really understand, you know, our target market, the audience. And we spent 6 months, in a cave, like working on this product without talking to any potential client. And it was not a great, you know, success, but that was something, you know, was something.
Yeah, and like out of these experiences at a young age, I mean, 12 years old, that's awesome. Yeah. High fives. What did you take from this? What are the maybe two or three things that you thought were useful lessons learned, i.e. you'd use again? And maybe also the two or three things that you shouldn't do again. So although that's, you know, the good and the bad, basically.
Yeah, no, that's quite, I mean, all of these mistakes that you make, that's quite obvious, right, when you think about it. But back in the days, there wasn't, you know, all these like great podcasts and content about, you know, entrepreneurship online. Yeah. So it was just, trial and error. And the objective was to make, you know, as many mistakes as possible in the least amount of time. And now I think it's easier, you know, to avoid like these dumb mistakes. For example, I remember, you know, like spending 3 months fighting with my co-founder about a logo, you know, what would be the logo of our startup or what would be the name, before even thinking about building the product or talking to clients or going to market. So yeah, I would say that the first, you know, like that's the biggest mistake is just to argue or to fight or to spend a lot of time about, you know, stupid things that really, you know, doesn't matter. You can change a logo at a later stage, or you can change the name, or you can change the design of a page or the website or anything.
And, you know, as you guys went through that journey, you've obviously met your co-founders at an early age and you launched Verbone. What was something that, as sort of co-founders, you found launching pretty impressive products to a well-educated market? What was the most challenging thing, and maybe more challenging than you expected?
So on our current startup, I would say that the hardest, you know, unforeseen challenge, it was certainly the hiring, you know, because when you are on the other side and you are looking for a job, you know, you think the employer, you know, has a lot of choices and it should not be that hard, right, for the company to hire someone. But when you actually try to hire, you know, you realize that there is a true talent competition, and you really need to sell the company to attract the top talent. You know, it's like a sales job, right? And if you add on top of that the problems that hiring seems like such, you know, a broken concept, right? Like in a couple of discussions, you are supposed to, you know, make a judgment on the future, 5 years performance of someone. So yeah, it's pretty tough. And it's funny because I remember, you know, for every role we wanted to hire, we always told ourselves, you know, with my co-founder, actually this role will be so hard because we want, you know, someone good, but that can understand what we do and we can't offer much. And in fact, realize that it was the same thing for every role, you know, like every role has its kind of, its own, you know, difficulties on the market. Maybe, you know, to recruit an engineer now, the market is pretty tight, but to recruit a product manager, it's the same, because right now, you know, in London, there are so many new startups that are fighting, you know, for the same pool of candidates. So it's, it's pretty tough. I didn't expect that.
And you mentioned in London, I mean, how have you overcome that challenge? Are you focused on London only, or, you know, as a result of what we've gone through over the last 18 months, maybe you've broadened your horizon and looked at, you know, Europe as well, and just getting more remote working, access to remote workers? I mean, how have you guys viewed that?
So, yeah, I mean, we really like the office, and I think for a startup where you need to you need a lot of creativity, you know, face challenges and to solve problems. I think it's really important, you know, to be all together for a proper team, you know, in a meeting room, solving problems. So we didn't really consider remote working, but yeah, we don't hire, you know, only from the UK, because, you know, my French background. And,
you wouldn't be allowed to.
Yeah. I mean, even if we try to meet the number of French people, we hire from everywhere, essentially. Even if it's getting more challenging now with Brexit, you know, to do the visa stuff, etc.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And as you guys have built this out, I mean, it would be good to tell our listeners what Verbone is and what problem are you guys exactly specifically solving in the market?
Yeah, so essentially we make it easier and faster for people, for investors, to invest together in innovative company, in startup. So on our platform, investors can create their private investment club. They invite, you know, other investors of their friend or from their network, and they share investment opportunities in private companies. And then this pool of investors can decide to invest on a deal-by-deal basis in different startups. So, you know, let's say you are an angel investor and you have access to interesting startup investment, but the minimum investment is too high. You can push all these opportunities to your, you know, investment club on the platform, and your friends or people from your network you invited can invest alongside you in the different startups you choose on a deal-by-deal basis. And the real magic happens in the background, where Verbone will provide, you know, all the legal, the financial infrastructure needed to pool and deploy capital. So for each deal, we would structure a special purpose vehicle, an SPV, you know, to pool capital from the investors, and then the SPV invests in the opportunity in the startup. So yeah, so far we have structured 400 deals, and 500 million have been invested through the platform. And the real problem, in fact, is that, you know, venture capitalists, fund manager, deal maker, they only care about two things: is to invest in great companies and fundraise from investors and develop relationship with their investors. But they, you know, they don't want to deal with the back office, the legal documents, the accounting, the regulation, etc. So the idea is really to have a platform where you can streamline all the back office to pull and deploy capital.
Interesting. And I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, I'm going to ask a question. Maybe it's a simple question, but maybe it's something that the listeners might be wondering. What's the difference between Vauban and maybe a syndicate, people coming together and investing together on certain projects and or startups?
So Vauban lets you run syndicates. So yeah, essentially there are plenty of different, you know, like finance, right? Like there are plenty of different terms for the exact same thing. But yeah, we let you run like syndicates or SPV or sidecar. Like there are maybe 10 different terms for the same concept, but it's exactly that. Yeah.
Okay, now I got it. And as you found the problem, you found the solution. You mentioned earlier on when you're starting one of your companies that you did some work in a black room and you built a product, but you didn't really talk to your target market or your target audience. How have you sort of changed the pendulum in this instance and made certain that you expertly understand your target market? How did you approach that part of the project?
It's a good question. I mean, the first thing we did was to, you know, put together a landing page with a very clear, you know, like statement. And then, I mean, yeah, I don't think there is any shortcut here. Like we learned a lot about the industry just by, you know, talking to like potential clients, to fund managers, etc. And again, like we heard the same story, you know, launching a syndicate or a fund or an SPV is a pain because of all the legal accounting, etc. So we're like, okay, there is a true problem here. It's not easy, right? Because you need to combine a lot of different skills, right? To build this kind of platform. But yeah, you know, talking to people, potential clients, reading articles, listening to podcasts about the industry. And that's what is really unique, you know, about the internet is that you can almost become an expert in any kind of market, and you can connect, you know, on LinkedIn with other experts from the industry or for like potential clients. And I was surprised on how easy it is to get in touch, like, you know, with people online, right? Like you can, like people are really happy to help or happy to jump on a call to discuss your product, even if you don't really have any product, right? So, yeah.
And this sort of analysis phase or research phase that you initially in, I mean, how did you make certain that you actually gathered the information, looked at the information, and then there was sort of an outcome, i.e., yes, there's a problem, because I know, or another way is, no, there's not a problem and we have to try again. So was there maybe structural process around the way that you went about that initial that initial investigation and research?
I mean, we launched, you know, many landing page.
Yeah.
Like for like maybe, you know, 10 different projects. So not like companies, but projects. And when we first launched the Vauban landing page, we were really, you know, overwhelmed by the like number of inquiries and the interest, right? It was one of like the first project with like so much interest. So for us, the problem was really obvious, you know, the problem exists. Mm-hmm. The challenge was more in the how do we execute? Because, you know, we are really at the intersection of law, finance, regulation, accounting, tech, etc. So the real problem was how to create, you know, a product that makes sense with all the different skills, etc. So yeah, that's like the demand was quite easy to get the, you know, the proof that the problem exists. But then the execution was something else.
And how did you go about it? How did you flip the switch? So you got the information, it was obvious, and then, okay, you guys are off to execution. Between you and your co-founder, what was the next steps? Did you have to go out and look at certain expertise in the market to bring in so you could start building out the platform? What was the next logical steps after that?
So, I mean, the difficult thing, like, because of fintech, is that we are a full stack, you know, like a full stack startup.
Yeah.
And so this means that we develop a technology to provide to the end customers, you know, a complete product or service that can, you know, handle the entire value chain of its activity. So, you know, think of Apple, you know, that needs to build the software as well as the hardware. And on our side, we need to build the software as well as the legal documentation, the banking infrastructure to do the accounting, etc. And so what's challenging is that you can't really build everything from scratch on day one, right? Like sometimes you have to outsource certain parts. We would, you know, make like partnership with law firms so they can, you know, draft like legal documents for customers or make partnerships with, like, you know, accountancy firm, and then automate and integrate all these different components in the product. So first we outsource, you know, we learn as well, and then we automate and we integrate in the product.
Okay, cool. And as you're building this and you've got your product, I mean, how did you also, because you're not just building a product, you're building a company. And if no one knows about it, then, well, nothing's going to happen. So how did you then approach communicating your offer and your solution to the market, or to your audience?
So you mean in terms of like go-to-market?
Yeah, exactly. So how did you build out your go-to-market? How did you tell people that... We're here, we're going to solve this problem, come talk to us.
So, I mean, we are quite lucky because our industry, like the investment world, is very opaque and intimidating for emerging, you know, fund manager, for emerging venture capitalists. So there is not much, you know, information online about how to get started, you know, how to launch your fund or how to launch a syndicate. Yeah. So we first wrote like a lot of article about that, and from like the SEO, because there was just no competitor, you know, like there was no information online about all that. Yeah, it was really natural. So through SEO article on our website.
Okay, cool. And when you started building up your team, so, you know, we've gone through, you found your target audience, you found the fit, you found the problem, you built your solution, you started communicating your ideas to the market using, you know, websites, SEO, et cetera. And, you know, then your team started to come on board, and you're obviously wanting to make certain that your team's aligned to your mission. Yeah. And how have you gone about making certain that, I mean, it's going back to the hiring, right? You hire the right people that embody what you want and also can take you towards your mission. How have you led that part of the growth of your company?
So in terms of hiring, or more in terms of aligning, you know, the team to the mission?
Aligning the team to the mission.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting question because we have this challenge that many other fintechs, startups have, where, you know, the world of finance can be incredibly obscure, right? Like, you have some people, they know nothing about it. And, you know, it's very different to work as a product manager or as an engineer for Instagram, where all the features will be, you know, really clear. Like if you want to share a picture with your, you know, with your friend, it's very easy to understand. But if I tell you, okay, what we need now is an SPV that can invest in a, you know, in a startups, and we want a feature to share a data room for the investors. Like if you know nothing, you know, about like startup or investment or investors, et cetera, it's impossible, right, to build this feature.
Yeah.
So we did like three things, yeah, to kind of align the team on the mission and on what we do. The first thing is to focus more on the why and the, you know, the impact of what we are doing more than the how. So the why, you know, would be to, for us to fund like more successful companies in the world, like, you know, to drive like economic growth for the world, etc. It's really about accelerating the pace at which capital is deployed in the private market.
Yeah.
And the second thing we did was just to, you know, to organize like, you know, workshops about fundamentals of finance. So in our case, it's like to explain, you know, the venture capital ecosystem, how does a startup work, why a startup need money, how does a venture fund work, all the concept, all the basic, you know, concept like the team will need to make sense of the mission. And the third one is a bit more original. Essentially, we use like, you know, social network filter bubbles as a learning tool. So, you know, everyone knows about these filter bubbles in a very negative way, right? Because it was like the scandal of the Trump campaign, where if you are like a right wing, you will never see any negative article about Trump because you only follow like pro-Trump publications. But however, there is a way to game these kind of bubbles to make them work for you. So let's say you want to learn something new, let's say, I don't know, machine learning. By following like leading, you know, machine learning publication and influencers, you can transform, you know, your bad habits of like scrolling on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram into learning about a new subject. Because naturally, you know, you will gain exposure to this topic, and through, you know, like various articles, posts, etc., that will lead you to other articles or books or other experts. You know, like your peregrination will transform into real knowledge. So what we did was basically to to put together a list of all influencers, you know, in the venture capital space and encourage the team to follow them on their favorite social network. And yeah, because, you know, we think like, you know, to build a great software, it requires to be completely, you know, immersed, right, in our like customers' universe. And by reading what they read, scrolling what they scroll, laughing at the, you know, like venture capital memes that they post, you know, we can develop a deeper connection with our customers.
That's very interesting. And can you help me understand how that played out over the weeks and months as you rolled out that initiative?
The first consequence is that like engineers or product manager will require, you know, less like detailed product specification because they would, you know, understand like the feature immediately because they will be, they will understand like the needs of the venture capitalists or of the investors or all the stakeholders on the platform. So the first step will be, you know, less bugs, like we would be faster as well, right? Because we won't need to explain, you know, everything because that will be now obvious for everyone what our users need. So yeah, I mean, we started doing that 3 months ago. So it's still, it's still early stage where we can already feel kind of the difference.
You also mentioned around the education and maybe having daily or weekly sessions just to educate everyone on various topics. And can you tell me a bit more about that? Because I think education and or training is critical to any company and definitely startups. And again, how has this manifested itself over the course of the initiative?
So first, it wasn't obvious, actually. Like, you know, it took us maybe a year to realize that, you know, maybe what's, you know, obvious for us was not really obvious for the team. Yeah. So we decided, you know, to organize like more, you know, workshop, etc. And yeah, I mean, it's essentially the goal will be to have interactive session where, for example, what we did last week is that essentially we have a test for our operational team to make sure that they, you know, they understand finance. So for all of our like finance people, they need to go through some technical finance questions. And what we did for the engineering team is to, is in this workshop session, let's go through the list of questions and you can use, you know, Google to find, you know, to find the answers and then we can discuss, etc. And what we realized that, you know, just with Google, you can actually answer, you know, most of the question on this finance test and you can actually, you know, like understand pretty much everything just, yeah, going through Google and searching the answers for these questions. And that's what interesting, right? Is that because when you are developing a software, you would use Google to solve like software, you know, software problem and software bugs issues on Stack Overflow, for example. Mm. But finance, it's the same, you know, it's not more obscure, it's not more complex. It's actually, I think, easier, right, than code. So you could, you could find the answers on Google as you do with Stack Overflow when you have a bug.
And it sounds like your teams also, don't know if this is the right term, but cross-fertilizing. So finance, tech, product, they're all looking at different, you know, different departments and understanding what each other are doing.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's why for us, it's in our core values, you know, to be polymath and curious about, you know, what the other team is doing. Because, I mean, as I say, you know, we are really at the intersection of law, finance, regulation, accounting. Yeah. So you need to be, you need to be curious about what the other team is, about what the other teams are doing. It's very important.
And I guess this builds sort of team morale and team spirit around various topics and also an understanding as to why things might be quite difficult at times for example, the finance team. Yeah. And I guess as you go, again, as you're growing up and you've evolved from you and your co-founder to building out your company of, what are you now, 27, 28? 28 people.
Yeah, there are 26 of us. Yeah,
26 are close.
Close, yeah.
How have you optimized your organizational structure? I know we've spoken about teams, we've spoken on different things, but obviously you've grown up and there's a different look and feel to that organizational structure. And it would be interesting to understand how you have viewed that and how you've optimized it over the course of time.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting when you take, you know, like interest in like organizational structure theory is that you realize that there is no, you know, right or wrong organization and you need to constantly, adapt the structure. Like every time, you know, your team double, you need maybe to change things, right? Like what may work when you are 10 would not necessarily work when you are 20 and 40 and 100. There is this component. And then, as I said, we are a full stack startup.
Yeah.
And when you are full stack, you have two organizational structure options. Or you divide your team by like operational function. So let's say engineering team, product, finance, etc. Or you divide it by products. So for example, at Apple, you know, there is not the hardware team and the software team. There is the iPhone team and the MacBook team and the iPad. And then inside this team, you will have, you know, some people that will work for the hardware and for the software. Obviously, you need to achieve like, you know, a critical mass, right? Because if you have only one sales, you can't be divided by product because you need to sell all products, right?
Yeah.
So you need to be at least like 30, 40 to make it work with like a product division. But that's what we decided. So now we are transitioning from an operational division to more like a product team. So someone that will, you know, like a team entirely focused on syndicates and a team entirely focused on venture funds. Because we think, you know, you understand the needs of the client, you know, in a better way if you are only focused, you know, on one product more than on, you know, like different verticals.
You build out your subject matter expertise then, right? Across the stack.
Yeah.
Cool. And as you look forward, and I mean, we've been in this digital world for the last sort of 18 months, and you know, there's lots of, you mentioned earlier on, I know you're in your office now, but you mentioned earlier on, you like, you know, huddling around, you like having your team close by so you can throw ideas out and start brainstorming. So what's on your virtual whiteboard or on your whiteboard right now that hasn't been there over the last 30 days?
So in terms of what?
What initiative? So what's one initiative that is now on your whiteboard? Or your virtual whiteboard that wasn't there 30 days ago.
So in terms of like employee initiative or like
it could be something that like it could be maybe some a new initiative. Are you going to launch a new product? I know you mentioned before the call the new product just launched, or there's a new growth spurt. I.e., you might need to be hiring. So yeah, those type of initiatives. Or it could be something else. It could be maybe regulatory related. There's a new reg coming in that you need to focus on and you need to tweak various parts of your product offering.
So the thing is that right now, you know, for the next 2 years, we are really focused on building our infrastructure.
Yeah.
So in terms of banking, in terms of regulation, and this thing takes time. So, you know, it's already planned like for already 6 months, you know, what's going to happen when. I mean, startups, you know, we take a lot of initiatives, so it's hard to give you a precise one. I mean, for we did something pretty cool 2 months ago, so it's not 30 days.
But
I guess,
it's good enough, right?
I guess it's good enough. Yeah, it's to create essentially a library where everyone can order a book from Amazon every month. Because as we say, you know, one of our core values as Vauban is to be polymath. So, you know, like interested into like different topics, etc.
Yeah.
And what we wanted is to live, you know, by our values. So we thought it would be nice, you know, to have like an original perk which replicate what we, you know, what we believe in, like our, you know, the polymath values that we believe. And it has been pretty cool. So, you know, you can like every month you can just pick a book from Amazon and discuss with your colleagues. So that was like an employee initiative, I would say.
Oh, that's awesome. I like that, right? Because again, it's coming back to what you mentioned early on where, you know, you as a team or as a wider team, 26 people learn together and share experiences together. So that's awesome. I like that. And as you move forward as a co-founder, what questions are you starting to ask yourself and what factors are you considering as you scale up and as you grow up?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you progress through the different stages, yes, there are a lot of questions, right? You ask yourself, you know, like how much, you know, should I fundraise? How high should the valuation be? How aggressive should I spend on my growth? Or, you know, all these kind of questions. And I used to think, you know, there was only one right answer, you know, to each of these questions. And then I began to notice some things that I would hear advice that sounded right. And then someone else would give me an exact, you know, like the exact opposite advice, but that made equal sense. And essentially, you know, like you have this these kind of balances, right? Like, for example, if you take the regulation subject, Uber and Deliveroo, you know, like they are very aggressive in terms of regulation, and that worked quite well for them. But for example, Theranos, you know, like the blood testing company that now completely collapsed, they were really aggressive on regulation. But when you evolve in the healthcare industry, maybe you should not be, you know, like aggressive because you play, you know, with people's life and it can be dangerous, etc. Right. So it depends in the industry where you are. It depends as well on your, you know, on your personality, etc. And it depends on the startup, your team. But you have all these, you know, different balances you can play with. And people love saying that things, you know, the right answer is somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. But in startups, it's often the extreme, right? Like you need to be or, you know, extremely aggressive on growth or not aggressive at all. For example, let's say you want to, you know, you want to grow as quickly as possible, but you want to be profitable at the same time. It's kind of like it's impossible, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you need to choose to be, you know, extreme on growth or extreme in terms of profits, but you can't really be both at the same time. So there are all these kind of decision and balances. So typically, you know, the question we would ask, you know, ourselves with my co-founder and the management team would be like, are we fast enough? Are we focused enough? Do we have all the resources we need to execute, you know, our strategic plan? And yeah, I find it interesting because, you know, these balances can change as well over time and changes on the industry, etc. So,
no, awesome. You make some really salient points there, mate. And it's just going back to the learning theme. It sounds like obviously your company is sort of part and parcel of you. You built it up and you've, even from the age of 12, you're learning on the internet and learning how to build businesses. So it would be interesting to understand sort of what books, what podcasts, maybe what blogs you're looking at and learning from that you think would be useful to this audience as they take the next steps in their scaling journey.
So in terms of podcast and publication, I really like NFX. Mm-hmm. So it's like a VC fund in the US, but they write a lot of content and podcasts, you know, about startups. And yeah, I really like their advice. It's pretty good. Yeah, in terms of books, I love reading like business books as well. But what I realized is that, you know, all the advices will nullify each other when you read enough. So at some point, some people will say, oh, the most important thing is the team. And you will have like 10 or 20 books about the team. And then some people will say, you know, the more important thing is the product or it's the customers or everything. So ultimately, you know, it's down to you and what you believe. I still think, you know, it's important to have like, you know, the basic fundamentals and to read, you know, maybe 20, 30 books. But at some point, it's redone, you know, to you and what you do.
100%.
Yeah.
Continuously learn, right? Try, test it, and then continuously learn and move on.
I really like startups book, for example, about existing startups. For example, the Theranos one, you know, Bad Blood. I don't know if you read that one.
Yeah.
But it's pretty crazy, right? Because like the Silicon Valley mindset is really to, you know, fake it until you make it or move fast and break things. It's really, you know, this mantra in the startup community. Yeah. And what I like about, you know, this book is that about, you know, the Theranos or the Bad Blood book is that you realize that in software, it's fine. You know, you can break things and no one will get harmed. Mm. But in certain sector, like when you play with people's money or people's life or healthcare or the regulated industry, you need to be careful, right? You need to make sure your product is robust. So maybe, you know, don't really fake. I mean, you can fake it until you make it, but not too much, right? Otherwise, it can really suck for people.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Listen, I mean, as we round up the show, I mean, how can, you know, the listeners get in touch with you and the guys at Verbund?
Yeah, so you can, you know, add me on LinkedIn. It's Ulrich Musset from Verbund, so Vaubann.io. And yeah, you know, happy to have a chat if, you know, you want to launch your syndicate, or we have a lot of role, you know, opening as well, like we recruit for product, sales, and engineering. So yeah, feel free to
cool. Okay. Nice, mate. And listen, awesome show today. So many great things you're saying. And, you know, I take away one of the parts around using ultimately learning from people that have been there and done it, and connecting with those folks and making certain that you understand their world, right? And that plays out across, not just for you, but across your team. So yeah, thanks for those valuable insights. It's been an amazing show. Loved it so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard.